This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
안녕하세요. I share that Korean salutation with you because Marie and I just, actually yesterday morning, East Asian time, we were starting our travel back to California and Jikoji. Marie was there for the 10th International Conference on, complementary medical research. Okay. The connection to the talk and hikes today, which was completely unexpected, but one of the sessions there at the conference was on forest therapy. I'd never heard that term before. Mm-hmm. Forest therapy. Maybe Ingrid or Charles have, but I hadn't. Actually, earlier in our days there before the conference started, we went a little early to do some hiking on this volcanic island. In the national park, there was an interpretive sign at the trailhead, and it said you were about to enter an eco-healing trail. So Ying Shakespeare, you've heard that before, that term, eco-healing?
Something like that, yes.
Something like that, yeah. I'm not sure that I had. And it explained, there's a brief paragraph on the interpretive sign, all the benefits of hiking in the forest. And, so that the connection I make to the present, to this sharing today, both of words and walking, is that that's sort of what I think was what was on the Sangha's mind back there in the late 70s when Haiku Zendo, primarily the Haiku Sangha, was looking for a place to practice outside of Los Altos, outside of town, up in the mountains somewhere. And Judy was much more part of what was going on that side of the hill back then. We in Santa Cruz, we didn't have the money that they had, so we couldn't really spearhead any look for property for a mountain practice place that Coben desired. But we certainly agreed with, at least what we thought was the one of the primary reasons for looking for such a practice place, and that is the benefit of being in nature, being surrounded by forest. Once again, for me, it was well before the more scientific terms used there at the conference in Korea of forest therapy. They, of course, had a sort of a much more scientific approach. You know, what the trees exude, or at least they're trying to figure out what the trees provide that just sort of showers the hikers who walk through the forest from a scientific perspective. Although they did use the word spiritual connection as part of their research goals. But I think that spiritual connection to nature, to trees, to forest, is what in part spurred Coben to want to have a practice place outside of Los Altos, outside of the Haiku Zendo. Although the Sangha then, did go to Dubenek Ranch for sesshins, it wasn't a place that was available to the Sangha at any time to go to practice to outside of town. It was a place that had to be reserved for the various sesshins during the year. And so the search was on, and eventually, as we all know, the Escuela Pacifica was purchased by Bodhi at the time, and we've been blessed with this incredible setting for our practice, for the 35 years since then. Initially we didn't make much formal use of the what was then 40 acres of the property here, then reduced by 75% almost to as the land was given over to open space, and we have this property that's much more manageable for our size. Little by little, we began to incorporate the value of the forest, of this bay laurel Madrone forest, into our practice, doing more and more outside the Zendo walls. One of the strong influences in that direction that I try to reconnect us with, at least annually in this weekend, or this day of talking and walking, is our Dharma sister, Stephanie Kaza. She was around this part of California, including Santa Cruz and Berkeley, and Angie Koji, back in those years, in those decades. And although I had crossed paths with her beforehand, one of my more intimate connections with her, you might say, was here at Jikoji when I led a practice period. It was a small practice period, living here for the practice period in the winter of 92, January, February then. And she had been working on a book, which I've once again shared with you these previous meetings here. It's called Conversation with Trees. And usually I have it here as a prop, but I couldn't find it on the shelf in the Jikoji library. Thought maybe it would be in Michael's room, but no one responded to the knock on his door, so... But maybe somebody has it checked out. It's a great book to have checked out, not just sitting on the library shelves. Conversation with Trees. She had sort of got it to almost ready for publication when she and the illustrator came here that winter of 92 to add his illustrations, his pen and ink drawings of the various trees she had had conversations with. Mostly in Central California, but up the coast, up in Oregon as well. And so they were here because the trees down at the pond, there's the five alders, are the ones that she had conversation with prior to that. And she wanted, I believe his name was Terry, the illustrator, to come in and illustrate not only that tree, but some of the others that she were going to then incorporate those drawings into the tree, into the book. So we had more of a chance to converse then. When I was sewing this robe that I'm still barely learning how to wear. But that was the era when I was spending time sewing and sometime talking with them. In the acknowledgments and dedications, Coben's the first one she mentions, that she's indebted to Coben for his Dharma teaching. And she says that Chikantaza, the practice that Coben came here to share with us, just sitting, is the foundation for her writing, for her conversations with trees. As she says, it's a time to just be in silence, to just be present, to come to the trees with no agenda, with no story, but just see what would unfold, to be completely present. that connects me to the next stage of my life. After I did that practice period here, I was hired by Pinnacles National Monument, then now National Park, to be a seasonal, at least at that time, a park ranger, and joined Charles here, who has already been on the staff there for at least a year. One of the interpretive trainings that we didn't go to together, that I went to myself, the author of many other books about environmental education, Joseph Cornell, very much echoed these words that Stephanie had in her book when he talked about how we need to come into nature, to learn from nature, to benefit by nature, by leaving behind our agendas, our judgments, our preconceptions. He says to turn off the shortwave radio that we can see ourselves to be, the metaphor of shortwave radio. Get out of the broadcast mode and get into the receive mode. Just go out there and receive, as Stephanie says here, be completely present, be silent. And so that those the teachings from Stephanie in her book, which was published in 1993, and then from Joseph Cornell, and I went to that training up in Ananda in Nevada City a few years later, formed the basis for the kind of learning, and then sharing that learning with during my 16 years at Pinnacles. And I'm sure as Charles and Ingrid have a chance to share their background for the kind of hikes they led and still lead, would be somewhat similar. So as the years went on here at Jikoji, we've started to do more outdoors. John Weber and I, another name that some of you may remember, co-led, maybe the first of those of a sesshin, a weekend sesshin, which was very few words, and you know, no dharma talks, no chanting. We did sit on the decks on the outside the zendo. We didn't use inside the zendo much, but sat on decks outside and did long, the first of maybe the outdoor kinhins back, I think it was in 93, 94, in those early years after that practice period and after Stephanie's book came out. And since then, we've started incorporating outdoor kinhin in most sesshins here. I know that Vanya and Angie are both proponents of having time off the cushion, out of the zendo, and carrying our practice to the forest, to nature, to the trees, to the earth. And we go out there in that kinhin mode, not necessarily the kinhin speed, but that the same mind that we have while we're sitting on the cushion, we practice it as we do outdoor kinhin for a few minutes or an hour. We go out there in silence with no agenda, leaving behind somewhere in our backpack or in our vehicles any lists that we might have come up to Jikoji with of things we had to do, and just leave it stored away there, and both in the zendo and outside the zendo have an open mind, our radio turned to receive mode. excuse me. And walk as silently as possible. Of course, that's the nature of walking during a sesshin. The outdoor kinhin is a given. We wouldn't be talking out there during outdoor kinhin. But taking advantage of the opportunity here at Jikoji and this beautiful territory around us, when we come up here to practice on our own, just an individual personal retreat or a Sunday after the morning program and after lunch. We can also have that same experience for longer hikes, go up the up Long Ridge Trail and down Peters Creek Trail, and still practice silence. Even if we're still walking with other people, we can walk in silence, periodically stop and be still. Then another component of this conversation with trees that Stephanie advocates is to stop, not continuously, but stop and be still for, you might even be still for a period of zazen out there to, initiate or continue a conversation with trees. And I see that Tenzo coming in here. Is that a message to us?
No.
Not yet. Okay. Very good. Thanks for joining us, Jonathan. A few minutes to spare. Good. Good. Part of my encouragement for you before we introduce Charles and Ingrid and what they plan to do this afternoon, which will be quite different. There are hikes, communing with nature that are conversational. They have a lot to share, these two longtime Sangha members of ours and naturalists and interpreters, to share with words and not only words but vision and touch, as many senses as possible, maybe even taste when it's safe to do so, which is a different experience, a different way to commune with nature than going out there in silence and sitting still with the trees, with the earth. So we have this opportunity in various ways here at Jikoji and various opportunities. But this afternoon, I want to encourage all of you to, even though it might not have been on your agenda, on your calendar for a while, take advantage of the chance that the privilege that we have of Charles and Ingrid coming here, taking their time off from their lives to share their knowledge of the environment that surrounds our practice place. It is part of our practice place. It's not that our practice place ends at the Zendo wall. Our practice place is broad, and there are no walls. So let me ask either of them, or both of them, if they'd like to explain something more to you briefly about the program for this afternoon after lunch. Ingrid's right there.
I planned on getting here early and checking out some of the plants since I couldn't get here because of the job. But I had to go. I actually work, I'm hired at another retreat center, Tibetan Buddhist Retreat Center it's in SoCal in the forest. And the program that I work with is, most people probably heard of it. It used to be called Elder Hostel, and now they rebranded it to call it Road Scholar. And it's around healing. It's the land of medicine Buddha, and that's the healing space. You know, that's a special Buddha, land of medicine Buddha. And they have people who come in, and they're herbalists, they're yoga teachers, they're qigong teachers around healing modalities, and they could include, you know, other healing modalities too, and of course meditation and nature walk. And that's what I do because they really honor it as healing, as part of that healing program. And most of the people don't have a background in extensive sitting, so it's talking, and they really appreciate it. That whole loop trail has, it's called the trail, the loop of the eight verses, and it's a Buddhist verses, and they have benches that people can contemplate. So it makes it easier to make the connection because they always ask, what does this mean? And the connection to nature, because it's all around self and no self. And people have a much easier time understanding that with nature, because trees don't insult you, or, you know, they don't do the things that we become heavily I am selves around. So that's what I was going to say, that it is encoded in Buddhist retreat centers, that nature as a healing force. And I work in a state park, and I just wanted to say the drama, why we couldn't get in here this morning. There are all these, you know, first responder vehicles up on top. You couldn't get in. And then there's this, right at the top, it looks like a concession stand. It was kind of hard to understand what's going on here. Well, there are four events going on right around this little refuge in here. There is REI, it was explained to me because I went right up to the Mid-Peninsula Open Space Ranger, and once you work in the same uniform, you pretty much are part of this little gang tribe, you know, you just, you know, okay, hey, what's going on, you know, whatever. And there's the REI introductory, you know, instructional hike. There's the REI instructional mountain bike. That's a separate event. There's a Sierra Club hike going on, and there's a marathon. So those are four organized events, and that's what that concession is, because they're serving drinks and pastries and stuff. Meanwhile, there must have been maybe pushing 10 first responders there, and then, you know, go Mid-Peninsula Open Space. Someone got, of those many groups, someone got stung by a wasp and got, you know, really bad reaction, but it's okay now. That is going to be, I just realized from the time when I lived here, it is so more intense, the impact all around this place. I mean, just from that, you couldn't even get in here. And it took a while, you know, for the road to be cleared. And I thought about that, how important it is to keep this as a refuge, and what kind of effort will have to be made. You know, because we've got a booming economy, we've got increasing population. People need to be out there, but people also need to have a quiet space like this. Anyway, those are just my thoughts.
This was up on Skyline this morning?
Almost. Right at the entrance.
This is on our road.
Our entrance.
They were lined up on the road, so anybody could come down.
Yeah.
That's easement. They have the right to use that.
But the vehicles, they blocked it.
That's just an unusual circumstance through, with the emergency vehicles.
Yeah, okay. But it does happen a lot right here. I noticed. My friends are the rangers for Castle Rock and for Portola. It's surrounded by, you know, state park. And I hear on the radio when I'm working constantly the emergencies and that they're responding to on 9. And you're probably all familiar with that. I know when
it's called 49.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But actually, being here, you don't even notice that all these four events were happening.
Yeah.
You have to penetrate the boundary to, and come in within our refuge to notice it. You didn't even know what was going on.
Well, I mean, out today, and I think that's actually a safety concern for this community, for anybody who may say something happened, someone needs to go to the hospital, those kinds of things. That's something that the Eno should know. And that's something that we should be informed of as a community. So that's why I was
Yeah, make relationships with the state park rangers, because they will respond to even here to emergencies.
Yeah, well, if you had an emergency, there were a lot of emergency vehicles there, so we didn't worry about that.
Yeah, or family emergency. You know, there's just there's things that one should be informed of. That's all. That's why.
Wow. What was it again that happened?
Someone had a really bad reaction, allergic reaction to a wasp bite.
Oh, okay.
You know, of those many events, and they had to. you know, there were no prisoners who died, but more or something died.
10 people.
Charles, anything you want to add about the to entice folks on, if they need further enticement than they already have, to join you and Ingrid, or all of us this afternoon?
Let me just say, walking is very much a natural thing. I don't think you could call it autonomic, you know, like breathing or your heart beating, but I don't think you have to be taught in the sense of teaching somebody how to swim or how to type. We're basically, it's like language, we're basically wired to do it. When we evolved to the point where we stood up, walking became how we got around, and for millions of years. It's only now, you know, and really, well, since they, you know, got horses and stuff, people started riding around quite a bit, but you know, now we have cars and people, you know, drive around and everywhere, and so walking, we don't think of walking the way we used to, that's the way we got around. So all I would say is, I walk a lot, and I walk in nature a lot. I live out in nature, very close. And so I walk, and I also want to say that walking gives you the opportunity to become intimate with where you live. It allows you to experience the world on a direct level, where you're going to move through the world, but at a pace that you can easily see, stop. When you're driving along, through, say, through the countryside in a car, you're going 60 miles an hour. I mean, and you're also insulated. You're in a steel capsule, climate controlled. You don't have that sense of being in a natural setting. Now, where I live, quite different. It's drier, and it's drier in the air, and you know, not as much rain, but it still has lots of plants and animals, lots. And over the years, becoming interested in it and becoming part of it. It becomes part of my community, my family. I know the birds and the rabbits and the deer and the plants, you know, their cycles. I always think of that we are a natural being, natural creation, like a bird or a tree. I think that being in nature, you become attuned with the natural order of creation and the natural order of your own being is part of that. In our world, we've become so boxed by human artifice, the human structure of everything, that we lose contact with with the natural world around us. And then, of course, the natural world around us is being changed radically. It's we human beings are actually destroying the world as a natural habitat. So places like Jokoji, the open space that's preserved, national parks and national forests and wildernesses, designated wildernesses, the commons, are so important. They could become really islands of the natural world, of natural creation, which is the very foundation of our creation. So this is I hope we just take a very nice walk and enjoy it. Now my both avocation and vocation, I'm retired of course, but from being a ranger interpreter, I did guided hikes all the time, but I still do them on my own, mostly in the community I live in, and people ask me to do it. And I tell people what's happening and what things I see, and if people want to know what's something, I tell them that, and I try to connect them with the world around them. What is it? If you know something, if you know, let's say that one of the flowers, like this, I'm thinking, look at out here in this little place out here. That is such a mix, such a hodgepodge with plants that are here from Asia and Europe and Africa. Where do all these things come from? I mean, this is, before, at least people started coming here as far as besides, the original people. We just brought all this stuff, and it continues. And it's sort of all become part of the, where we live now. And very, very interesting to me to see how the world's changing. Anyways, I hope that when we go walking, that we'll use our senses, be attentive, see what's there, enjoy it, and ask questions. I will say this, I'm very parochial. In other words, I know where I live very well, and I can step out of that to a degree. But now, Ingrid knows a lot more about this area than I do, so I hope she'll make sure that she fills in things. Of, what's that? I'm not quite sure. Anyways, that's about all I have to say.
Well, I think it's, once again, strongly want to encourage the residents here, primarily because you have this is your surroundings, where this is your garden, your sort of your personal garden, and you have a chance to interact with the guests here, with answer their questions or suggest something that you might learn from Charles and Ingrid today on the hike. But certainly those who don't live here at Jokoji, including myself and Marie, look forward to spending these hours with you. It'll probably start soon after we get cleaned up after lunch, and would be an hour or two, whatever. I don't know if you have any limit as to when you all want to finish, or just it'll be open-ended?
Well, whenever. Right. I wanted to mention this book. This is a book that Peter gave me. It's called The Mindful Hiker by Stephen Altshuler. It's wonderful. It's basically a man's spiritual path, by walking. You know, he walked. He had a favorite trail, which I think that if you walk a lot, you'll develop a favorite place or favorite path or trail. I think of all the walkers that really influenced my life. John Muir, you know, Henry David Thoreau, Mary Oliver, my gosh. She walked everywhere, and that's where she, you know, her poems come from there. She used to keep, because she'd forget, she put pencils in different trees. So she got somewhere, she didn't have a pencil, she put a poem down. But they, you know, inspired me. Like John Muir, they do a walk. He used these legs we were given. And anyways, that's a nice little book to read.
I found that book at the Point Reyes hostel where I stayed at during a weekend of hiking, and read it. That I thought it was something I wanted to pass on to Charles. But once again, it's called The Mindful Hiker. Once again, I'd encourage you to, if you haven't already read Stephanie Casa's Conversation with Trees, dedicated to, or thankful to Colbin, and chapter on the alders right down here alongside the pond. If I'm going to buy another one and put it in the Jokoji Library in case that other one walked away and didn't get returned. You should have at least two copies around here, because it might be ends up in somebody's room, so I'll track down, get one out. She has been for years now a professor of deep ecology in the footsteps of Joanne Massey at the University of Vermont in Burlington. But she was out here for the 10th anniversary of Colbin's Parinirvana. She was here that weekend. Speaking of hikes, we get our bid in time, us meeting Charles Ingrid and I, we have a weekend at Jokoji for this sitting and mindful hiking, which includes a moonlight hike. Well, it didn't happen this year. We barely got a Sunday time available to us because we didn't move soon enough. But if you're interested, and I encourage you to do nocturnal hiking too, in 2 weeks on the 30th of May, Saturday night, I'll be leading a moonlight hike, as I've been doing as a volunteer docent at Pinnacles National Park. And it's very much in the spirit of mindful hiking. It's quite quiet, as few words as possible for me, but the Pinnacles landscape is a great place to hike under moonlight. So if you want to have that experience Saturday night, the 30th, or make it a weekend of camping and hiking at Pinnacles, both day and nighttime. So you're welcome. And you're supposed to call and sign up for those if we limit the number of people, because a small group is much more conducive to attentive hikes than 50 people showing up. So they have a reservation request. So I'd like to leave you with one of my favorite quotes that I use on the hikes I lead. And it's from Ann Dillard from her Pilgrim at Tinker Creek book. And it says, she wrote, "It's all a matter of keeping our eyes open." And I would say it's a matter of keeping our senses open. "Grace and beauty are performed whether we will them or sense them. The least we can do is be there so that nature does not play to an empty house." The least we can do is be there so that nature does not play to an empty house. So with those, what I think are inspirational words from Annie Dillard, I thank you for your presence here, and look forward to lunch and a walk with you this afternoon with Ingrid and Charles. And if there's, since we not have a bell, if we find that there's still a few minutes away from Jonathan's lunch, we could go for a few minutes of quiet, silent walking, because I know when we're with Charles Ingrid, there'll be there'd be quite a few of their wise words to be hearing.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.